Look, I'll start this hour off by reminding you that this talk show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. We start hour number two. Had a good first hour. Conversation with Jimmy Johnson, the seven-time NASCAR champ. Just gave away a golden ticket. And a lot of you seem pretty fired up about that. Matt in L.A. is now in the competition. Telephone number is toll-free nationwide and in Canada, 1-800-636-8686. As promised, we are joined right now by a defensive end for the L.A. Chargers. He is entering his fourth season with the Chargers. Six sacks since the start of 2018. He played his college ball at Notre Dame. He was the 225th pick overall in 2017. He is the co-founder of local human apparel brand, and I have a lot to talk to Isaac Rochelle about. Isaac, great to have you on. Listen, before we get into the offseason and what you're doing with Local Human, how are you and the folks around you right now doing during this really unusual time?
Yeah, first off, Jim, appreciate you having me on. Super excited to be joining in. But, you know, everyone's good. It's kind of the same old, same old. We're in the same boat as everybody else. Just kind of wondering what this new normal is going to look like moving forward. But, yeah, we're good.
Isaac, great to have you on the show, and I appreciate you saying that, and it's good to hear you doing so well. So take me in. Like, you are like the rest of us in that sense. So what's a normal day like for you right now?
Yeah, well, first off, Jim, I love how you call me Ike. That's a nickname that, like, only Chargers players have called me, but now it's stuck. But, you know, the days for me are interesting, but what I've tried to do is try to keep somewhat of a routine. So I know you've talked to Michael Badgley before. Is that right?
Yes, true.
So Michael Badgley's my boy. So him and I go down to a downstairs garage that we built from scratch. And we go get a lift in at 6:30 every morning. That's just to keep the routine going. And then past that, it's just, you know, stretching and sessions later on, trying to keep the cardio up and keep the body feeling good. But I'm so thankful to have him as my neighbor, so him and I can just go down there and grind.
All right, so for those who don't know, you and Michael Badgley, he's the kicker. You also have your own podcast. It's the Mike and Ike Show. You started that last year. What has that experience been like for you? And for those who have not heard it, what do you guys do on the program?
Yeah, so Mike and Ike Show is it's basically just what we like to say. We're just getting, you know, player stories and really – not just players, just people of influence, getting their stories from their perspective. You know, it was a fun thing that him and I just wanted to start. We both felt like we meshed and we would interview well together. And so now we finished our first season of the show. We had some good people on. We had Hunter Henry. We had Gary Vee. You know, just a couple people that are two opposite sides of the spectrum. And we're about to start season two. We actually have an interview today with somebody. I won't say who it is. We'll announce that later, but we're excited to get things rolling.
Isaac Rochelle is joining us. You mentioned Gary Vee. I remember I've had him on a number of times. Isaac, I remember the first time I saw him, and it was years ago. I didn't know him at all, and I just happened to drop on some content he had. I'm like, damn. And it doesn't happen very often, but when you see something so crazy and so unique that just kind of pulls you in, what was your first impression when you heard him or saw him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a beast. And if you know, you interview him, you don't have to say too much. He'll kind of take the reins, and he talks, and it's like what he says is so valuable. You know, my first impression from him was, you know, this dude has a life lesson for like anything we're talking about. And I think what he is he's extremely motivating, and he's extremely smart and extremely articulate. So, you know, for us to be able to sit down and interview him, huge shout out to him for doing that. One, and two, it was a really cool experience for Badge and I.
Isaac Rochelle is joining us. You know, I'm struck by this already talking to you, and I'm not surprised, but I've always said this about this program. I've done this a long time. For whatever reason, guys who went to Notre Dame and guys who went to USC, those two programs in particular, always show up extremely well on this show and every other show. And then I look at your team, like a big chunk of your defense went to Notre Dame. It's a group that already included you, Jerry Tillery, Drew Tranquil, Alohi Gilman was drafted this year, Asmar Bilal, Dante Vaughn signed as undrafted free agents. Like, is that a coincidence, or is there something about Notre Dame guys that fit with what the Chargers are looking to do?
Yeah, first I've got to give you a hard time. You can't just lump USC and Notre Dame in the same category.
I just did, though.
I think what has happened is you've had Notre Dame guys come in, and the Chargers have had Notre Dame guys in the past who have done really well. I think they serve as leaders, and then they're also extremely productive on the football field. I mean, you take a guy like Drew Tranquil, for example. Last year, he came on as a fourth-round draft pick. He made a huge scene in the special team area, blocked a punt the first game. I mean, that hasn't been done in years. And then you talk about what he does defensively. And then you add on his leadership skills and the respect that, you know, his peers have for him. I think it's a no-brainer to take a lot of Notre Dame guys. I'm obviously biased, but it is what it is.
Yeah, let's not respect also what you said about USC. There's no way as a Notre Dame guy that you're going to let that go. So I get that. Yeah. I understand that. It's just weird, though. Yeah. I'm telling you, the Notre Dame guys and the USC guys do interview really well. But as a Notre Dame guy, I would have checked me hard on that, too. You know, when you look at the talent you have on defense, and then when you look at the arrival of a guy like Kenneth Murray in the draft, and you get Chris Harris Jr. in free agency, when you look at your defense, how good can it be this year?
Oh, I think it can be lights out. I mean, I always like to start with the D-line. I think I can't picture another D-line as good as ours with as much depth as our D-line has. I mean, just in our room, we've had a lot of guys stay, and we've had a lot of retention, which I think helps with the overall development. And then you talk about we have two Pro Bowlers on the edge, signing Linval Joseph. He's going to come in and make a huge impact. Justin Jones, this is just our starter. You know, he had a huge impact last year and should moving forward. So I think that's the anchor of the defense. And then you said it, Kenneth Murray. I mean, that dude's a beast, bringing him on. I can't imagine what offenses will do having him and Derwin James. I mean, like, where do you run the ball? The amount of field that they can cover defensively, and then you add on Rayshon Jenkins and, you know, Chris Harris and some of these other guys. I think we have so much potential. And, you know, the cherry on top is Gus Bradley. He's a beast. I love his energy. He comes to the facility every day with great energy. So I think we have tons of potential.
Isaac Rochelle is joining us. You know, you said something at ESPN last year I thought was really interesting. Quote, it's important, especially for athletes, to not just be doing athletics. I think it's important to exercise other parts of your brain. For me, it's photography. I want to get your thoughts on that, like the brain. Do you see the brain as a muscle that has to constantly be developed like other muscles? Why is that so critical to what you do?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because it's not a, you know, we only, as football players, a lot of people just talk about the negative effects of football in our brain. And I think that's important to talk about. But I think there's a more positive approach you can take, which is let's keep our brains active. We challenge ourselves from a football perspective to learn playbooks and learn new schemes and expand our football IQ. But I just think it's so important off the field to be doing things to continue to grow your mind. I do see it as a muscle. You know, I'm doing a lot of things off the field that I think are really productive for my mind and my overall personal growth. And, you know, I think when you have organization in your life, it spills over into football. I think when you're doing productive things off the field and you know how to compartmentalize and keep those things off the field, it just helps you on the field. So I'm a huge advocate of, you know, keeping the mind active and doing productive things.
All right, something else you've gotten into, I've noticed, you've gone plant-based lately. You and your girlfriend recently did a video where the team, where you went to Sprouts to make the perfect plant-based burger during quarantine. What was your approach to the burger, right? And how pleased were you with the results?
Yeah, you know, I love my cooking all the time. But, you know, it's just, I'm not plant-based all the time. But, again, it's just, as an athlete, I think you always have to, you know, find what is innovative, what will help you on the field, what will help you, you know, to feel good. And so I'm open to trying things like being plant-based. I did a plant-based diet for 6 months. I thought it was really good. I'm human. It's hard to sustain. But, you know, it's just something that I always incorporate. New eating techniques, new lifting techniques, whatever it may be. I think it's important to switch it up.
Isaac Rochelle joining us for a few more moments. All right, I mentioned off the top, too, that you're the co-founder of Local Human, which is an apparel brand with intention. How did the brand first come to be?
Yeah, so it came to be just having tons of time in quarantine. I have some individuals in my apartment complex that I go to the dog park with a lot. I just got this puppy. And, you know, we're sitting around at the dog park and we're just talking about how we want to have an impact during Corona. And we just kind of decided, hey, let's just start selling shirts, see what happens. We're gonna donate a shirt for every shirt sold to foster youth, and we're going to give back to a campaign of the month every month. So kind of a double-edged sword what we're doing, but it's just happened organically. It's grown pretty fast, and we're really excited about what we can do moving forward.
Right, so there are a lot of apparel brands that will say something about how they have good intentions or they want to change the world, and then there's some that really do it. The campaign right. for May is a partnership with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Why was that an organization that you wanted to support, and how are you getting involved?
Yeah, so Local Human is selling what we're calling the Mindful Tee. For every shirt sold, we are, one, donating a shirt to Orangewood Foster Center, which is in Orange County, and then, two, we're going to donate $10 from each shirt to fund programming, advocacy, and support for those affected by mental illness and suicide. And this is what I say. At the end of the day, one in five adults deal with mental illness. So if you don't have it, you know somebody that, you know, deals with mental illness. Another crazy stat is, you know, for people from the ages of 10 to 35, the second leading cause of death is suicide. So the point that I'm trying to make is these are things that need to be talked about. And Local Human just wants to have a little piece in that. We want to be able to give back and, you know, donate money from every shirt to keep these things going, because we think it's super important, like I said, to talk about and for people to understand.
Well done. Isaac Rochelle, my guest. You mentioned the dog. What kind of a dog did you get?
An English Cream Golden Retriever. She's a beast. I think she's the smartest dog there.
Probably really smart and probably has a great demeanor, right?
Yeah, she's got a good temperament. And, you know, I grew up on a farm. I had a farm dog that didn't come in the house. They kind of raised themselves. So it's been different for me to have this spoiled dog in the house. But you know what? I love it. And I'll probably end up getting another dog here pretty soon.
Hey, last thought, what was it like growing up on the farm? I got to believe that some of this grit, some of this grind, some of this work ethic, some of this focus came from that. What was it like growing up on a farm?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is what people think it would be. It was my dad, you know, being annoying at the time, waking me up super early, you know, teaching me some of these skills that I now call transferable skills that I still use today, you know, and I'm thankful that I had it. It's like anything as a teenager. It's not always fun when you're going through it and the grind, but you look back and you're like, dang, I'm super happy that my dad made me do some of those things, and I'm super thankful for him.
You know, it's interesting because, like, I'm in the 949 right now, but I grew up in the 818, and I grew up in an area where it was kind of like the suburbs, but there was a little bit of land, and people had horses, and my old man loved, like, he thought he lived on a farm, he wanted to live on a farm, and he'd put me to work every single weekend. I don't know about your pops, but not only would he put me to work, he was not good at the work, and then he'd make my boys, like, if I had a friend over, he'd like, come on, man, we're going to work.
Yeah.
And I'd say, hey, pops, like, I get it, it's your house, I know I have no choice here, but if you keep putting my friends to work, I'll have no friends. And he didn't care at all. Was your dad like that?
Jim, you get it. I'm telling you, my dad, I'd have boys come over and we'd be like about to play basketball and hang out. And he would have us out there, you know, putting up fences, feeding the animals, whatever it may be. But it's funny because we would do that stuff and then we'd hang out and we'd be shooting hoops and we'd be like, man, that was super annoying. And now we are like, we would give anything to go back and just sit around and put up fences. So like I said, I'm so thankful for it.
Not me, brother. I'm still pissed. I still resent it like 30 years later. I got nothing out of that, man. I'm not better for it. No, I see you working. I know exactly what you're saying. Chargers D end Isaac Rochelle joining me. Isaac, great job. That's a great Jungle debut. Let's do it again soon.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you very much. Great job. Really well done. Another Notre Dame player just killing the show. Yeah, man, my pops was something else. I had one friend who didn't mind. My guy, Spots. Spots, man, his childhood was so tough that he thought it was awesome when he came to my house. And my old man put a shovel in his hand and said, come on. Hey, Spots. Come on, Spots. We're going to go clean up some horse crap. I'd be like, Dad, come on, man. Really? Really? It's Saturday. Hell yeah, we are. And then we're going to build fences. I'm like, damn. But Spots, like, his childhood was so jacked up. He thought it was cool. He's like, hey, man, it's not a problem. I said, I appreciate that, but it's kind of a problem for me. He's like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I'm like, you're right. Let's go clean up some horse crap. Isaac Rochelle, my guest. All right, 1-800-636-8686. See, my man Ike, he at least grew up in Georgia. Like, I grew up in the suburbs of Southern California in Los Angeles. I grew up in a place, look this up. I grew up in a place called Hidden Hills. That's where a lot of the reality stars live right now. It's like upper middle class for wannabe cowboys, for people who think they live in the country, but they don't. I'm like, oh no. Oh no, we have land. We have horses. My old man's like, here's a real irony. Like, I've owned racehorses. I love horses. I love the animal. I love horses. My father and my mother asked me, do you want a horse? I'm like, hell no. Why would I want a horse? I don't want a horse. And then my dad would say, okay, that's fine. You don't have to have a horse. Good, because I don't want one. But you're going to feed them. You're going to clean up after them. And on Saturday, we're going to go to the lumber yard, and we're going to buy wood, and we're going to cut that wood, and then you're going to paint that wood, and we're going to build fences, because those horses kick the fences out all the time. I'm like, this sounds like an amazing childhood. Can I have my friends come over, and can they help? Yeah, wise guy, that's exactly how that's going to go. Why don't you call your friends up? They can muck out the stalls with you. Hey, let me ask you this, Dad. When we go to the hardware store, can we listen to your jazz and take the long way? Oh, you think you're funny. Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah, you just buy yourself another stall. You and your boy. Just having some fun, Pops. My dad passed away in the early 90s. Just having some fun, Pops. Your music sucked. Nothing but respect, man. He was tough. He was good. And this is great, too. He, believe me, he would tell me how to do this show all the time. He had lots of takes on the show. I'm like, oh, now you're producing my show. Do I tell you how to do your job? Those arguments never went well for me, by the way. I don't think I won any one of those arguments. Never went well. And now that I have kids, now I understand why they didn't go well.
Break.
Ooh, I gotta get a break. My bad. Sorry. Tyler Kepner coming up next. Get me going on that stuff. When your battery goes dead, everything can come to a stop. Do not take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or your truck at a guaranteed low price. Keep your car on the road by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. And when you need auto parts quickly, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices. Every day, O'ReillyAuto.com.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Loading it up. Three interviews in the first half of the program. Good interviews, too. We got Jimmy Johnson, seven-time NASCAR Series champ. And we're going to keep this thing moving right now. Isaac Rochelle with a jungle debut coming up big. And as promised, we are joined by a national baseball writer for the New York Times, author of K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. He is Tyler Kepner. Tyler, it's great to have you. Before we talk baseball, first off, how are you and everybody around you doing during this pandemic?
Yeah, we're doing all right, Jim. Thanks for asking. Got four kids at home, and they're all being pretty well behaved and hanging in there. So it's all good. Good to be healthy and you know, together, but missing baseball, of course. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. I've got a couple of kids at home. Four is a pretty big number, but you know how it is. I mean, I'm doing everything that we're supposed to be doing and a sports talk show when there's not a lot of sports to talk about, but it's been really interesting, and I'm trying to find the silver lining. Thank you very much. You know, last time you and I spoke, Tyler, it was during the NLDS. The morning after the Dodgers had that huge sixth inning, and they beat the Nationals to take a 2-1 series lead. Man, that feels like so long ago. The Nats come back, they win the series, they sweep the Cards, then the World Series. And then we have the Astros and the Red Sox punishments, the delayed start to the season. I guess what I'm getting at, how would you sum up the last 7 months of baseball?
Boy, it's been bizarre, man. I mean, almost since the moment that Jose Altuve hit the home run to beat the Yankees and set up the World Series, it just got crazy with the so much Astro controversy and noise during the World Series, and then the road team winning every game, which was kind of bizarre, and then the cheating scandal and all that, the spring training responses, and then this. It's just been so weird, and now the the real questions about whether they'll have a season and what that'll look like. It's really crazy. Because even if they have a season, Jim, I mean, you know, with the proposal they put out there, you know, for 82 games, there hasn't been a season that short since the 1870s. I mean, even the strike years that, 81 and 94, 94 they didn't have a World Series, but they still played more games. So it's the truncated season, if they even have one, is going to be really weird historically.
Tyler Kepner joining us. All right, so on that point, what do you make of that? Like, it would include 82 regular season games, an expanded postseason, the DH in both leagues. We can get to the financial side of things in a minute, but when it comes to the structure of the season and the addition of the DH in the National League, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, that would be such a seismic kind of decision in any other year, but now it's just sort of like incidental almost. It doesn't even get a whole lot of discussion, but you know, that's something they've never had, DH in National League versus National League games. So that's huge. And, you know, teams didn't prepare for that, in the off season. But certain teams that, you know, have an extra big bat hanging around, you know, like potentially the Mets, if Cespedes is healthy, they can play every day. That's big. The season itself being 82 games is strange. I think that'll benefit teams with maybe a younger pitching staff, whereas, you know, like, let's say the Oakland A's or something, a team that I think has a lot of potential, everybody does, but with so many young pitchers, you wondered, like, if they would have the stamina to be there in the postseason. Well, you know, only 82 games now, so I don't think stamina is going to be a question for anybody. And the divisional play, you know, just basically sticking to your own division and the division in the opposite league is going to be weird too. A lot of matchups that we're used to seeing, we're just not going to see this year. So really interesting structure. And then, of course, the extra playoff teams. I mean, they're only playing a half season, and they're adding more teams to the playoffs. So it's sort of like, if there's a champion, then you know, it'll be in the annals as the champion. But you got to wonder, like, how much is it going to mean if it's a half season with all these extra wild card teams?
Tyler Kepner is joining us. And Tyler, in terms of the proposal financially this week, the owners and players would split the revenue this year 50-50. How do you think that idea is going to go over with the players?
Well, I know it's already sitting very not very well at all with the players, because so much of it is about not just now, but about wondering what comes next. I mean, the players union has always been really, really careful not to set precedence, in regards to a salary cap, especially. And they feel like if they give in on this and say, all right, well, we recognize it's a difficult time, and we're going to agree to this structure, then what's to stop the league from, you know, saying in the next CBA, like, well, times are really tough financially, you know, people aren't coming to the ballpark the way they used to, so we're going to have to, you know, continue this revenue sharing plan. It's just not what the players want. It's what they've always been philosophically against. So I can't really see them bending on that. I guess you never know if negotiations get how negotiations will go, but at least early, I'm getting a lot of strong rhetoric that they have no appetite for that, because they feel like they've already negotiated that stuff. They feel like they did that in March.
We're talking to Tyler Kepner. And then you've got Washington Nationals reliever Sean Doolittle, who I thought had a really interesting thread on Twitter this week that included this line, quote, "Bear with me, but it feels like we've zoomed past the most important aspect of any MLB restart plan, health protection for players, family, staff, stadium workers, and the workforce it would require to resume a season," end quote. It's a pretty strong statement. What do you make of the overall argument?
Yeah, I think, you know, right before we can even get into bickering about the financial stuff, we've got to be assured that the players and all the workers it entails to put on this big show, 15 games a night in all these different cities, are safe. And, baseball's coming up with a 80-page proposal. I think Ken Rosenthal wrote that, for the health and safety standards that they're going to debate and try to work with the union on getting that, because, you know, they want to put their players in a safe position too, and they got to have protocols for what happens if a player tests positive. You don't want to shut down the whole league. And Jim, the big thing is it's not going to happen unless there's access to a lot of tests, you know, widespread access to testing. And we hear so many conflicting things about anybody can get a test needs it, or is it anybody who has symptoms can get a test? They're going to have to get access to tests without depleting the public supply of tests. And so far, they don't have that just yet. So I still think there's a lot of hurdles to come. I'm not going to really believe this until we see it, because ultimately the virus is in control, not baseball, and the local municipalities letting them play. So it's a lot of hurdles beyond just the practical ones and the financial ones for the players.
Tyler Kepner joining me for a few more moments. Now, Tyler, The Last Dance is airing right now. You tweeted that you saw Michael Jordan in spring training back in the day. I've got to ask, what was that scene like, and what do you remember about that?
Well, it was, it was neat, you know, seeing a guy like Michael Jordan playing. I mean, at this point, it was just in any old spring training game, I don't remember a huge media crush, because I think he'd been there for a few weeks, but the fans were obviously really interested. He signed a lot of autographs down the right field line. I remember, at Smith Stadium there on the way into from the field to the clubhouse. That's where they go down the right field line, so the fans would congregate there. And I remember Jordan signed a bunch of autographs, and I was really there. I had a little baseball magazine at the time, but I was on spring break from college at Vanderbilt, and I wanted to talk to they had a pitcher named Scott Sanderson who had gone to Vanderbilt. And so I was like, oh, I can get a good story here for the Vanderbilt paper on a bandy guy in the big leagues, when it used to be a lot more rare than there are now. There's so many bandy guys in the big leagues now, but back then it was a little rare. So I was talking to Scott Sanderson by his locker, and then Jordan comes in. You know, I could see him out of the corner of my eye, like coming in with the position players to the clubhouse, and he saw a North Carolina game on TV, and I could hear on my tape when I played it back, you know, go Tar Heels, North Carolina, it was just kind of cool to hear that very distinctive Michael Jordan voice in the background of your interview with a relatively anonymous veteran big leaguer, when there's the most famous athlete in the world in the same clubhouse. Maybe I should have been focused on Jordan, but the Scott Sanderson story turned out to be pretty good, I got to say.
Yeah, a lot of Vandy pride. I see you working. That's actually a great story. Listen, one last thought. Tony Gwynn would have turned 60 last Saturday, and you pointed out on Twitter, there's so many mind-blowing stats about him, but how about this? Pete Rose could come back and go 750 for 750 and still have a lower batting average than Tony Gwynn. I mean, how ridiculous is that stat?
Tony Gwynn was insane in terms of the numbers that you can find about this guy and what a wizard he was with the bat. I mean, you could not get a ball past him. I'm trying to find it on the fly here, but Tony Gwynn faced Greg Maddux. He never struck out against Greg Maddux, and he faced him more than any other pitcher. I think the stat is he faced Maddux, Pedro, Clavin, and Smoltz. All the times he ever faced him, hundreds of times, he only struck out four times. I mean, Tyler,
not to correct you in your own book, but I'm going to help you with that, because I've got the stat. I took this out of your book. 323 times, and he struck out just three times.
There it is. Yeah. Okay.
Is that insane?
I'm going to the index here trying to find it. But yeah, that's it. 323 times, and he struck out three times against all-time great 3,000 strikeout kind of Hall of Fame.
Incredible.
I mean, he's probably the best pure hitter of the last, really, since Ted Williams. And so then you're talking like the integrated major leagues, you know, going back to Jackie Robinson. Tony Gwynn is probably the best pure hitter. I miss having him around. I mean, I didn't know him great, but the times I talked to him, he was like your best friend, like someone you'd known forever. And he'd sit down with you in the dugout, and look you in the eye, and just give you all the time you needed. Really exciting, enthusiastic guy about his craft and the game. He is one of those people. When you say he has missed, he really is, because I wish, you know, Tony was around now in this game day and age where everybody strikes out so much and people don't put much of a premium on contact anymore. This is a guy who was productive and the ultimate contact hitter. He is greatly missed, and it's neat to see, you know, his birthday comes around. Even the president retweeted four things about Tony Gwynn. I mean, who knew Donald Trump was a Tony Gwynn fan? I guess he learned something new every day.
He was an enormous personality. He was so engaging, always had that gigantic smile, that energy. And again, that stat came right out of your book, K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. I mean, that is insanity. Maddux, Smoltz, Glavine, Pedro, 323 at-bats and struck out just three times. Tyler Kepner wrote that book. He's also a national baseball writer for the New York Times. Tyler, great to get caught up. Appreciate your thoughts on all that. Stay safe, and I hope we can do it again soon.
All right, Jim. You too. Stay well, my friend.
You too. Good talking to you, Tyler. Thank you. Pete Rose could go 750 for 750 and still have a lower batting average than Tony Gwynn. Amazing. Not only that, Tony Gwynn could tell an amazing story. Tony Gwynn told a story on the show about Ricky's cleats. Everybody's got a Ricky Henderson story, everybody, but nobody could tell it quite like Tony Gwynn.
Ricky's had a lot of trouble with his cleats, and every pair of shoes that he gets, one of the cleats break off. And he's gotten six or seven pair of shoes, and out of those six or seven, I mean, five of them, a cleat has broken off. And so Ricky was in the – let me finish this, all right? Ricky was in the clubhouse the other day in Colorado, and he had just made an out, and he rushed into the clubhouse to change his cleats. And I was sitting in my locker, and my locker was next to Ricky's, and Ricky came in, and he looked at me and says, "Tony, man, Ricky cleats keep breaking every time. Every time I go out, Ricky can't do nothing out there without a cleat breaking." And
that was Tony on this show doing a tour stop in front of an audience. Old school. Old school. Tony is an active player. Great, great stuff. All right, when we come back, we're open the rest of the way. 1-800-636-8686. What do you want to hit on? I've got thoughts on Mike Tyson and what that, quote, comeback is all about. Is it legit or not? Do I want to see him fight again or not? More live sports tonight. More UFC action. I'll get into that. And a player profile for the upcoming Smack Off. I want to change up. I was going to do a player profile on a former champ, but since I gave Matt Nelly a golden ticket, I've decided to do a player profile on Matt. Just kidding. No! Yeah, but I might. Normally, I do not do player profiles on golden ticket recipients. I might make an exception for Matias Miramano. Time for your sports update. Here you go.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Tonight at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, we've got doubleheader action inside the cage. You've got Mitrione against Bader. You have Fedor versus Sonnen. You can catch Bellator MMA Recharged right here on CBS Sports Network. 1-800-636-8686. Quick reminder, it's already Wednesday, which means we've got a Jim Rome podcast, episode 129. That's going to push out after the program. So with some time on your hands, if you're looking for something to do, give it a spin. Bill Wennington, a member of the second three-peat with the Bulls, joins us to talk about what that was like. Running with Mike.
Oh.
Bill Wennington. Good dude. I'm looking forward to that. We will have that. We've already had BJ Armstrong. We had Stacey King. And Bill Wennington's going to make three from the Bulls dynasty. That's episode 129, and that's coming up after the program today. Make sure you find that. I'm looking at a lot of telephone calls that are lined up right here. The question is, are any of them good? Should I take any of them? What do you think, Hawk? Hawk's shaking me off. There's like several phone calls. If they're not good, why did you put them on hold? Why did you not just politely tell them that's not going to work? He's saying don't do it. Yeah, but Hawk, a lot of times you tell me to do it and it's horrible. So what if I kind of turn that thing on its head? You tell me not to do it, maybe it'll work. You tell me to do it and it doesn't. So now you tell me not to do it and maybe it will. Let's find out. Let's go to Richmond. Billy in Richmond. Billy, you're in. What's up? How are you?
What's up, Van Smack? First off, I want to tell you, we love you so much. As a frontline worker and a truck driver, we listen to you every day, and you are so funny. Dude, when you color out of the lines, the first time I heard you color out of lines, when you start to run some smack, it's just not about sports. It's when you started talking about your childhood, when you had to work on fences, listen to bad jazz, and go to antique shops. Man, that was off the hook. See, you are the pimp in the box, one of the people who help us out here. When we're driving these trucks every day, especially during this pandemic. Jimmy, if I take one piece of plastic off my hands one more time, I'm going to lose my mind, Jimmy. I cannot stand it. I mean, first off, you put Matt in L.A. in? You did? Good. Because he, you know what he did? He banged his head off the wall enough. He did it, Jimmy. He worked hard. Work ethic is what America's about. And he worked it out. The only person in the jungle I want to get after is Rick in Buffalo. Look, Rick, I'm from Richmond, and you're not Jeff. You are not. You are a slack-ass copy. Jimmy, we love you out here. And Rick, good night now.
Billy in Richmond, my man. Stay strong, Billy. Stay after it. He says he likes it when I color out of the lines. I'm not looking to intentionally color out of the lines. It's just that Isaac Rochelle came on the program, and I said, what was it like growing up on a farm? I have to think that a lot of that grind, a lot of that grit, a lot of that heart, a lot of that drive, a lot of that work ethic came from growing up on the farm. What was that like? He said it was exactly the way you think it was. And I didn't like it at the time, but I look back on it right now, and I really like it. I said, you know what? It makes me think, because I grew up on a farm too, except it was a fake farm. It was a fake-ass farm. It was a one-acre farm. I didn't grow up on one of those, like, rolling, sprawling farms in Kentucky or Georgia, you know, 100-acre farms. I grew up on a one-acre, quote, farm in Los Angeles, or the outskirts of L.A., in the 818 in the San Fernando Valley. It was a wannabe farm. It was a fake farm. It was for well-to-do, upper-middle-class, fake farmers. And my old man, he was something else, my dad, Jay. So Jay, and he did let me call him Jay. I did call my dad Jay because I went to work for him, and then he fired me. That's what kind of guy he was, which I totally respect. I never respected my dad more than when he fired me. It was awesome. One, because I hated the job and I didn't care. But two, because he was true to form. Like, I'd grown up at a dinner table. My parents owned a small business, and I heard this night after night after night after night. Business is business. Business is business. Business is business. Take care of the business, and the business will take care of you.
Business is business.
Business is business. Business is business.
Hey, business is business.
I remember one day after several years, my dad and my mom at the dinner table looked at my sister and I and said, you know what? We're not going to talk business at dinner anymore because it's really not fair to you kids because you're not a part of the business. So it really isn't fair. And I thought to myself, good, man, those business stories suck. We're not a part of it. The business is boring. It doesn't interest me at all. The thing is, my mother and father own the business. And because they both had their separate roles in the business, they would come together at night and dinner and compare their notes of the day from the business. But it was family time. But I think they noticed that we were tuning out and they weren't really about the family. So they said, we're not going to do that anymore. And I thought, great, because the business is really boring. So what do? I get into the family business. And then he fired me. But I respected my dad more than anything for that, because I deserved it. I sucked at the business. But to be fair, he sucked at making fences. And so did I. We weren't good at that. The difference is I knew I wasn't good at it, but he thought he was. And maybe deep down he knew that he was not the handiest guy in the world, but man, he loved it. He was working the land. He was working his farm.
I love it.
Thing is, we were always early risers too. Like every Saturday morning, we'd be up early. And he was from Boston. He had that Boston dialect, that Chow dialect going. He'd say, come on, let's go. And I'm like, oh, great. Where are we going? And then I checked myself immediately because I knew that was a mistake. What do you mean? What do you care? Get in the car. All right. I just want to know, are we going antiquing or are we going to buy lumber to build more fences? Or are we going to go buy some shiny new shovels so we can shovel some more horse crap? I just want to know. I just want to know. Because I already know what music we're going to listen to when we get in the car. That's right, smart guy. That's right, smart guy. Get in the car. We're going to Home Depot. We're going to buy some wood. We're going to make some fences. And then we're going to go antiquing. When are we going to watch football? Get your ass out of the house. Man, I know the problem that my old man used to have with me watching football all day on Saturday or Sunday. I can only imagine what Grandpa Rome would be doing with the video games. If he had trouble with the Dodgers, the Lakers, and the Steelers, what the hell would he do with Fortnite? I can't even imagine. Because I know how much trouble I'm having with it. Good times. Just me coloring outside the lines. Ain't that so, Billy? I love it. Hey, no, like anybody else who's lost somebody close to them or a parent, you wish they were around right now. Man, the things, I can't even tell you how many questions I've had over the years from my dad. They're all coming flooding back to me right now. Like, why did I have to listen to that music? I know, because it was your car. Wait until you get your own car. Then you can listen to what you want, right? Oh, I can't wait. All right, when we come, like I tell my kids, now I listen to cool music. You have any idea how lucky you are? I got Lithium playing right now, or Alt Nation. Third hour is coming up next. Stay tuned.